If you're visiting for the first time today, or maybe you're back for the first time in a while, or maybe just because I was out of town last weekend, you may have forgotten that, or not know, that we're in a short series on discipleship. And as we've been talking about discipleship, discipleship is really what the church is called to be about. Jesus told his disciples to go into all the world and to preach the gospel and to baptize in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit and to teach people to observe all that he commanded. And so really, discipleship begins with the beginning in baptism and people coming to faith, and it ends when we finally get to that place where we're obeying all that Jesus commanded. But in that process of discipleship, there comes that beginning point that I think for many of us is kind of a scary spot. And that is sharing our faith with those around us. For many of us on the job or with our neighbors, with people we think might be antagonistic towards the news of who Jesus is, it can be a frightening thing to think about sharing your faith with other people. It's like the story of the two hunters who go to Alaska to hunt for bear, and they get out in the wilderness, and then they see a grizzly bear, and they realize how big this bear really is. And seeing this bear, the one hunter looks at the other and he says, "I'll tell you what, you go track the bear where he went, and I'll go just see where he came from." I think sometimes we feel like that when it comes to evangelism. It's like, you go speak to Joe and witness to him, and I'll pray for you as you go. There's that side that some of you have experienced. But it is part of our calling. As people who represent Jesus Christ, we're called not only to teach people, but to help bring them to that place where they know who Jesus is and understand how important he is in their lives. And this morning, what I would like to do with you is to share with you a story that is a significant story when it comes to the whole subject of discipleship. In fact, it was a pivotal story in the lives of Jesus' disciples. And this story really is what God used in their lives to impress upon them the importance of sharing this good news with other people. If you have your Bibles, I encourage you to turn to Luke chapter 5. This is a fishing story. And the thing that makes this a unique fishing story is this fishing story actually happens to be true. So many of the stories that I've heard over the years that are pretty memorable fishing stories are kind of based in fable. But this one is recorded for us in Scripture, and yet it's an amazing story. Now let me just give you a little background as we come to Luke 5, because we haven't been studying the Gospel of Luke, and we're kind of jumping right in the middle of Luke's Gospel here. Jesus has already started his ministry, but it's really the beginning of Jesus' ministry. He already has a pretty big following, because as we see as the chapter opens, there's crowds that have gathered to hear him. And as he's done a couple times as you read through the Gospels, he decides that the best way to speak to the crowd so that they could see him, so he can be heard, is to hop into a boat. And so he sees there are two boats on the lakeside, and he hops into one boat that belongs to Simon Peter, and he uses that for his pulpit as he speaks to the multitudes. Now, first looked at Luke chapter 5, I found myself kind of scratching my head and realizing at this point, there's been no mention of the disciples. If you read through Luke chapter 4 up to this point in Luke chapter 5, Jesus has yet to call his disciples. So I found myself wondering, why in the world would Peter just let Jesus jump into his boat? Well, I think the main reason he probably did that is if you do read chapter 4 of Luke, Jesus has had a significant ministry already in the life of Simon Peter. Jesus goes to the home of Simon's mother-in-law, and she has a very high fever and is in apparently in very desperate straits. And Jesus comes, we're told, I think it's verse 38, and heals Simon's mother. So Peter, while as far as we know, he hasn't yet committed himself to follow Jesus, he's already been impressed with Jesus and already is aware that Jesus is an amazing teacher and a miracle worker. And so it isn't very surprising then that he would allow Jesus to use his boat. But he still has a long way to go for Jesus to use him as he plans on. It's also interesting as you read through the gospel up to this point, the only mention of Peter to this point is what happens in Luke 4 when Jesus heals Peter's mom or mother-in-law. But even in the beginning of this story, he is referred to not as Peter, but as Simon, which is his given name. If you know the story of Peter, you know that he was Simon, son of Jonah. His dad was in the fishing business, and Peter was in the fishing business, and so they followed one another, and his name is Simon. But Jesus, we know over in Matthew, renames Peter. He calls him the Petros in Greek, the rock. Solid leader in the church. And we're in Luke chapter 5, this chapter, he calls him Simon, then Simon Peter, and from this point on, he's called Peter, which I think means that something takes place in Peter's life in the course of this story. So anyway, that's a little bit of the background of what's going on. Jesus gets into this boat, begins to preach, and as he speaks to the multitudes, he's got a bigger lesson, as is often the case, to teach the disciples than what he's teaching the multitudes. So when he finishes his preaching, he begins to teach the disciples. It's interesting in the context of what's happened, the disciples have been fishing. Now, I'm not a fisherman. I confess that right up front. That's important for you to know because in my experience as a person who has tried to fish over the years, I just find that fishing, for one, it's always at uncomfortable times. You're supposed to get up really early in the morning to catch fish, and I don't really like to get up early in the morning to do much of anything, but certainly not to catch fish. And then you have to go out on a lake, and that can be enjoyable, but not always. And my main reason, I think, for not liking fishing is that almost without exception, whenever I have gone fishing, I'm the one person when they say, you can't miss at this spot, everybody gets a fish. I don't get a fish. So I just don't have any luck. We had a, when I pastored a church in Wisconsin, there was a stream that ran through the town of River Falls where we lived, and it was a trout stream. And one of the elders in the church was a great fisherman, and he said, I guarantee you, we will go and we will catch some trout in that river. Not only did I not catch any trout, but he didn't catch any trout. So that's why I'm not much of a fisherman. But Peter and Andrew and their friends James and John, they were all fishermen, and they were there when Jesus was speaking to the multitudes. And as Jesus gets into the boat, he has this great idea. He tells Peter, I think we need to go fishing. So I want you to get in the boat and let's go out and go fishing. Now that would have been fine, except we discover that Peter has already been out fishing. In fact, we discover as Jesus shows up there to preach and as he's getting in the boat that Peter, Andrew, James, and John, they're cleaning up. They've been out fishing all night. It's been one of those nights that I can relate to because they didn't get anything. Nothing was there, and they were frustrated. They were tired. They were ready to go home. And now Jesus has the great idea, let's go fishing. Now, I can't read into Peter's mind, but I think there is evidence as you look at this passage that, and just as you think about how you would feel, that Peter was a little annoyed with Jesus. I mean, Jesus is not the fisherman. Jesus is a carpenter. And so Jesus the carpenter is telling Peter, in charge of Simon or Jonah and Sons fish company, how to fish. And Peter's been out. He's been fishing all night. And they haven't caught anything. And you got to give Peter the benefit of the doubt that as a person who was raised there on the shores of Lake Gennesaret, which is the Sea of Galilee, that he knew where to fish. I mean, you don't make a living fishing if you don't know where the fish are. So they clearly must have known where to fish. They've been out all night. They've been fishing. And they get nothing. So they've been out at the right time, which is apparently at night. They must have gone to the right places. And they still got nothing. And now Jesus, the carpenter, comes along to tell them how to fish. Now, for those of you who, like me, are not fishermen, you may not appreciate the frustration of Peter at this point. But imagine you and I go to a Yankees game. And we watch the Yankees play, and it happens to be one of those games where the Yankees aren't playing particularly well, and Derek Jeter happens to be in a slump. He gets up the first time and strikes out, gets up the second time, hits into a double play, third time he flies out, fourth time he strikes out. And I tell you, you know, Derek Jeter just really needs some tips on his swing. So let's catch up with him after the game. We'll wait outside whatever door they come out, and I'll give him a few tips. Well, not only would you probably not want to accompany me as I make a fool of myself, but when Derek Jeter is tempted to take a few practice swings at me, you'd probably not blame him for that, because I have no right, no place to tell Derek Jeter how to hit. He's the professional, not me. And so I think that's how Peter must have felt as Jesus says, hey, let's go fishing. It hasn't been a good night. And that's, and as we pick up the story, that's really what the feeling you get as Peter speaks to Jesus. He said, this is verse 4. He says, when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Simon answered, Master, you can just hear him. We've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I will let down the nets. Now, there are a couple things that are probably pretty important for us to note in that verse. He says, he calls Jesus Master. He recognizes that Jesus is in charge. And he says, Master, we worked hard all night. And we haven't caught a thing. In roughly translated from the Greek, what he says is, the fish ain't biting, Jesus. And you want us to go out and go fishing. Now, we don't know exactly what was in Peter's mind, but I don't think it's a stretch to assume that he's thinking he doesn't know what he's talking about. In fact, my guess is instead of thinking that way, he's probably thinking, who is he to tell me what to do? I think we'll discover as we look at the story that that's an important question. Who is this person who is telling Peter what he's supposed to do? Also worth noting in verse 5 is there are two sentences in verse 5. The first one we already noted. Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. And then there's the second sentence, but because you say so, I will let down the nets. Again, I'm reading into this a little bit, and I can't say this is what happened, but I wonder if there was this pregnant pause between those two sentences. Peter says to Jesus, we have fished and we have fished and we've been out all night. We caught nothing. And he expects Jesus to say, okay, I understand, Peter. You're the fisherman. Let's blow this off. Bad idea. But as Peter protests, we've been fishing all night. I think Jesus just kind of looked at him like, yeah, so? And Peter says, okay, but because you say so, we'll do it. Now, although I tend to think, and I think this will be borne out when we get to verse 8, Peter's response to Jesus, that he was not totally willing, he was still obedient. He knew his fishing, and he knew this was not a good time, and going out now was not the right time. But still, we've got to give Peter credit. He still said, okay, Jesus, if you say so, let's go. So they get in the boat, and they go out for the fishing story of a lifetime. Because they weren't fishing with poles and strings. They were fishing with nets. And I picture it like a giant hair net. You know, you throw it down, and it's got weights on the side, and it comes down to the bottom, and then they pull it together, and they pull up fish. And they've been doing this all night. They went out to their best spot, and they threw the net over, and it went down, and they pulled on it, and it came up empty. And they threw the net over the other side of the boat, and they went down, and they pulled it up, and it came up empty. And this was the story of the night. It was a frustrating time. It's interesting, and we might miss this because I'm not a fisherman, as I've already confessed, but Jesus says in verse 4, put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch. My understanding, not from my knowledge, because I not only don't fish with a pole, but I never have fished with a net, but my understanding is that you normally fish with a net in shallower water because the net goes down and then it kind of traps the fish at the bottom and then you pull it up. And so if you go too deep, there's no bottom to catch the fish on. So just to drop the net down in the middle of the water is pretty futile. But Jesus, not being the fisherman, not really knowing what he's doing, tells Peter, let's go out in the deep part. And we'll fish there. And Peter is thinking, he is not a professional like me. I know this is not going to work. But he doesn't. He is obedient to Jesus. And that's really important for us to understand in this story. He's not convinced Jesus knows what he's talking about, but he's obedient nonetheless. And so they go out to the deep part. They throw the net over the side. And Peter's thinking, I wonder how many casts of this net it's going to take before Jesus realizes that he's not going to have any more success than the rest of us. First cast, they throw it down. And Peter starts to pull up on the net. And he thinks, oh, man. This is even worse than I thought. It's snagged on the bottom. I mean, not only are we going to come up empty, but we're going to have our nets broken by some snag. And so he asked Andrew to help him pull on the net. And then he realizes, as an experienced fisherman, this is no snag. There's fish in this net. And he starts to pull up, and you can just picture these guys, these muscular fishermen, and they're pulling with all their might, and they're having a hard time getting this net up. And so Peter says, hey, James, John, you got to come over here. We got a net full of fish. And so they come over, and they bring their boat, and the four of them are hauling up this net, and it's so full of fish that the four of them are having a hard time pulling it up. And as they pull it up, they unload the fish into the boat, and there's so much fish in one boat, they unload the fish in the other boat, and there's so much fish that both boats are on the verge of sinking. And Peter's looking around. He's never seen so many kinds of fish. He's never caught so many kinds of fish. And all of a sudden he realizes, Jesus knew that. And all of a sudden he realizes it's not because Jesus is a fisherman. It's because Jesus is something, something much more. And that's why Peter says, he signaled to their partners on the other boat. They came to help them, and they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. And when Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man." Why would Peter confess his sin to Jesus there in the boat? Well, the only thing that makes sense to me is, up to this point, Peter's been going along with Jesus, not because he agrees with Jesus, maybe because he wants to show Jesus who really knows how to fish. He's kind of annoyed with Jesus, but he goes along anyway. Then all of a sudden, the boat is full of fish. And Jesus has filled both boats in a way that Peter has never experienced a fishing experience in his life. And it says, Peter fell at Jesus' knees. That just in passing, I thought that was interesting, that one of the commentators said this probably was maybe translated wrong, that Peter fell at Jesus' knees. But you know, think about it, in a boat, if Jesus is in a boat and you fall down on your knees, you're falling at Jesus' knees. I mean, that's as a real picture. Picture this boat full of fish, and Peter's having a religious experience there before Jesus. He says, "Get away from me, Jesus. I don't deserve you." But Jesus wasn't just taking Peter and Andrew and James and John through this experience so they would have a great story to tell. He wanted them to learn a lesson that would change their lives. Because he wasn't teaching them about fishing for fish. He wanted to teach them something far more important. And he says in second half of verse 10, then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid." I mean, Simon was overwhelmed at what Jesus had done. "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will catch men." So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. Jesus wanted Peter, Andrew, James, and John to have this fishing experience so they would learn a lesson. That if they were going to be effective in Jesus' service, they just had to do what Jesus told them to do. And Jesus told them, like he tells us, to be fishers of people. He says to us, go into all the world and preach the gospel. He says to us, you will be my witnesses, beginning where you are. In the case of his disciples, they began in Jerusalem, but for us, it's beginning here in Westchester. And then going to the uttermost parts of the earth. That's what Jesus has commanded for us to do. And yet, I think quite often for us, we find ourselves thinking, you know, I've tried that. I have tried sharing my faith, and it wasn't effective. I mean, I've been trying to share my faith with my spouse, and she's not listening. Or I've been trying to share my faith with my next door neighbor, and they just don't have time for it. Or I've been trying to share my faith at lunch, at work, or at school, or wherever it is, and you've done it once or twice, and it hasn't worked, and you're just thinking, I've done enough. And yet, Jesus says, go. Be a witness for me. And the message Jesus had for his disciples is his message that he has for us. If it's what he tells us to do, we need to do it. I mean, here is the simplest way I can put it, the most the way you can be most effective in evangelism. It's not whether you use friendship evangelism and build relationships, or whether you use a track, or whether you go door to door or whatever else. The key to effective evangelism is you do it. I mean, if you spend all your time debating which form you're going to use, but you never do it, you're never going to accomplish anything. D.L. Moody, the great evangelist, was once criticized for his manner of evangelism. And he said, "Well, I'm not totally satisfied with how I share my faith. How do you share yours?" And the person, "Well, I don't really do it very much." And Moody said, "Well, then I really prefer my method over your method." And that's what we need to learn. If Jesus, the Lord of the church, Jesus, God incarnate, if he calls us to be his witnesses, then we need to do it. We need to do it at work. We need to do it in our neighborhood. We need to do it at school. We need to share our faith with friends and with neighbors and with coworkers. And it's not necessarily going to be easy, and we're not always going to have a boat full of fish or a string of people who are coming to faith in Jesus Christ. We see that with Peter. In the book of Acts, as the book begins, Peter stands up before the Jewish leaders, and he speaks up for Jesus. They were a very unreceptive audience. In fact, he got beaten for it. But he did it. And if you and I are ever going to make a difference for Jesus Christ in Tarrytown and Westchester or wherever he may take us, we've got to do it. That's, as simple as it is, the secret to effective evangelism. And we have to be sensitive. I'm not suggesting you stuff something down somebody's throat or you don't care about their needs, but you're faithful simply to do it. That's what this story is all about. It's not really a fishing story at all. It's evangelism 101, how to share your faith with other people. And it's possible you're here this morning and you're thinking, "Well, that's not where I'm at. I'm still trying to figure out what my relationship is with God." And if that's where you're at, I would encourage you just to listen and see if Jesus isn't challenging you. If he's not stirring in your heart. And if he is, then just ask him. Say, "If there's anything to this, Lord, help me to listen. Help me to be open." I think you'll do that. But for the rest of us who've already made that decision, we need to learn a lesson from the fishing story. There's a story of Willie Mays. Willie Mays was standing at the batter's box, and he was getting ready to for a pitch. And as he was standing at the batter's box, he kept stepping into and out of the batter's box, and it was really rather annoying to the catcher. But he just kept stepping in, and when the pitcher was about ready to pitch, he would step back out, and then he would step back in. And the catcher finally said to Willie Mays, "What are you doing?" Willie Mays just pointed over to the dugout and pointed over to his manager, and he says, "I'm just doing what the man says." That's what made Willie Mays a great baseball player. Just did what the man said. And if you and I are going to be great for God's kingdom, our challenge is just to do what Jesus has commanded us to do. And if we're faithful with that, he can use us to make a difference for him.